Hello, welcome to Retro Asylum, episode 211. My name is Chris Worthington, and I'm here with... nobody. It's just me. They finally let me have an episode all to myself. Just what I've been waiting for. 2.5 hours of me waffling on about... actually, no. You'll be pleased to know, it's not just 2.5 hours of me waffling on about retro games. I'm just here to introduce my interview with the CEO and President of Intellivision Entertainment, Tommy Tallarico. Tommy and I chatted about a week ago for about an hour and a half about all things Amico and a brief bit about Tommy's career before Amico. He's a really fascinating guy, as you, I'm sure you'll hear. And if you are like me and you were a bit sceptical about Amico, then I think you might well have changed your mind by the time you get to the end of this interview. But before we go into that, I also just want to thank our wonderful Patreons. And we've had a few more joiners since we last read out this list. So I would like to thank, in no particular order, the fantastic and wonderful Richard May, Jim Orbis IT, Duncan Bell, Edward Fitzpatrick, John Veal, Jeremy Shaw, Gary Heather, Thomas Goffham, Nick Lees, Andy Marsh, Lee Clark, Martin Stevenson, Patrick First, Matt Sullivan, Magnus Espiona, Stephen Stuttard, Darren Coles, Andrew Gilmore, Stelios, Aaron Morpin, John Shepherd, Blake Brett, Chris Rowe, Paul Ashton, Rick Jackson, Lorenz De Bruyne, apologies if I've just murdered your name, Aidan Marriott, Mark Billund, Clint Humphrey, and Reese Wynne. Guys, you are wonderful. Thank you so much. And if you want to support us, you can just head over to patreon.com, search for the Retro Asylum, and anything that you can spare each month to help with the running of the show is amazingly appreciated by us. So, without further ado, let's crack on. Here is Tommy Tallarico.
This is Nancy at Chase headquarters. We have an emergency here. Carlos, the New York armed robber, has been seen listening to Retro Asylum without leaving a review on iTunes. Over.
Leave it to us, Nancy, baby. Let's go, Mr. Driver.
If you really enjoy the Retro Asylum podcast show, then please leave us a review on iTunes.
Tommy Tallarico, welcome to Retro Asylum.
Well, thanks for having me, and I love the name of Retro Asylum. You can't get better than that. It sounds like it's going to be a fun time.
Well, hopefully we'll keep it sane while we're here as well. It's a pleasure to have you on, taking some time out of your busy Friday afternoon. But you must be busy over there in Television Towers.
A little bit. We got a few things going on over here, yep.
I bet you have. Well, look, we normally start our podcast. There's normally a couple of hosts on at the same time. And for over the years, we've always started by asking one another what we've been up to. Now, okay. We don't hang out every couple of weeks, so I won't ask you what you've been up to. But what I will ask you is, Tommy Tallarico, what have you been up to for the past 30 years?
Well, that's a good one. How much time you got? No. I started in the industry about 30 years ago, as you mentioned, and I was hired as a games tester and for Virgin Games, which, of course, emanated from the UK, Mr. Richard Branson. And I was there for about 4 years, worked on some of the biggest games for the Genesis and Super Nintendo and PC during that time, stuff like Disney's Aladdin and Cool Spot and Seventh Guest and many cool projects, The Terminator. And then in 94, went out on my own because a lot of the team who worked on Cool Spot and Aladdin, best friend David Perry, started Shiny Entertainment, and they mm-hmm. started work on Earthworm Jim. So that's I had left at the same time, about the same time they did, and started my own company. Worked on Earthworm Jim and 1 and 2 and MDK. And then from there, just, you know, started working with every company. So did everything from like stuff like Mortal Kombat and the original Tony Hawk Pro Skater and some of the Bond games and some of the Sonic games, some of the Twisted Metal games, Mortal Kombat. And then Guitar Hero had some involvement in the original Guitar Hero as well. And yeah, so, you know, did that for a very long time. Then 1995, I was approached to do a television show about video games called The Electric Playground, and that was syndicated worldwide. I did that for 12 years, and we were actually shooting 2 half-hour episodes a week, so 104 episodes a month. Wow. Because we branched out into a second show called Reviews on the Run, which was us reviewing video games, me and the creator of the show, Victor Lucas. So did that for 12 years, all while I was still doing the music thing. And then in 2003, I decided to start Video Games Live.
Why not?
Why wouldn't you? And, and by 2007, I was leaving the TV show because I just couldn't do all three things at once. So, now that the show had become so big that we were doing, you know, 40, 50 shows a year all over the world. And Video Games Live still continues to this day. Been running 17 years now. We own 2 Guinness World Records, one for the longest running video game, the longest running symphonic touring show ever, over 513 performances. And then we also hold the record for the biggest symphony show ever seen live. We did 752,000 people all watching an orchestra. And that was in Beijing. We played the Bird's Nest, the National Olympic Stadium. There was 130,000 people.
Blows my mind.
Inside, and, you know, 600,000 looking out, from out. So, so I did that. And then, of course, about 2.5 years ago, I started, I kind of purchased a big stake, in Intellivision after, our good friend and, former president, Keith Robinson. I'm thinking UK here.
That's
Keith,
news.
Keith Richards. Yeah.
Exclusive.
He was doing heroin and playing in television. It was amazing. No.
Multi-skilled guy.
Yeah, exactly. Heroin Hero. It's a great game coming out for Intellivision. No, Keith Robinson, sadly passed away, good friend of all of ours. And so that's kind of when I, you know, kind of took the helm and had an idea for a new console. And I saw a huge gaping hole in the video game industry that, that was making me sad. And I wanted to help fix. So yeah, that's kind of what I've been up to for the last 30 years. That's the condensed version. I know that's not very condensed, but it's the best I could do.
Well, I'm not sure we're ever going to be able to follow that ever again on this podcast. So thank you very much. You've just broken the mold. But we'll come back to the whole gap in the market thing, because I suspect that's something we'll talk about quite a bit. I just want to just unpack that little bit about how it came about that you joined Intellivision, because you've obviously had quite a varied career, but it's largely been around music and video game music and generally kind of being involved in the development of games. How did it come about, and when did you get the idea that, you know what, owning a stake in Intellivision would be a really good idea?
Well, so for me, my system growing up was Intellivision.
Am I?
I was. Oh yeah, great.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know how popular it was over in the UK. You know, I mean, obviously not as popular as Atari, I'm sure. But that's the thing that people don't realize about Intellivision. You know, it came out in 1979, 2 years after Atari, so they had a big head start, and they were also less expensive than Intellivision was. But what people don't realize is that by the early 80s, Intellivision was doing $500 million a year in business, had 1,800 employees worldwide, and you know, held 20% of the entire home video game console market, Atari being about the other 80%. And so that's pretty darn impressive, you know, even for today's standards. $500 million back then is like $1.4 billion today. So it was really amazing, you know, what they were doing. So, but I was always an Intellivision fanboy. When I think of the Intellivision, and you're probably the same, you probably think of those times spent, maybe it was with your mom or dad or brother, sister, whatever, those times when you were a kid, when you would play with your friends and other people coming over. And that's when I think of my childhood and my family, we all have lots of memories going on vacations and doing this. But a lot of that time was spent playing in television as well, too, you know, and that's the thing that's been lost in the game industry. And I mean, there's a whole generation of teenagers and younger who've never played in a room together, right? You know, it's all they know is online. Multiplayer means a kid in a dark room with their headphones on. You know, when the internet invaded the video game industry in the late 90s, you know, before then, multiplayer meant four-player split-screen GoldenEye, you know, or everybody in the room playing Bomberman or Mario Kart split-screen, or, you know, Tekken and people taking turns with Tekken and Street Fighter or whatever it was. And that all changed, you know, and that human interaction and contact kind of went away as, you know, everybody started to become, you know, solitude. And then a great thing happened in 2006 when Nintendo launched the Wii, because they were trying to go away from Sony and Microsoft, right? They wanted to do something completely opposite of them. And I know this because I was working on, you know, one of the first games that were coming out with the Wii. In fact, I worked with Shigeru Miyamoto for nearly 5 years. Wow. Working on Metroid Prime. Mm. And their whole idea was, you know, the amazing thing is the third biggest selling console of all time sold 102 million units, generated $50 billion in revenue. And, you know, Nintendo kind of caught lightning in a bottle. They never meant to sell a video game console to nursing homes, but they did, you know. My mom bought a Wii. So many people, you know, purchased a Wii. So, you know, that tells me something, that casual gamers are absolutely willing to purchase a home video game console if it's something that's affordable and fun and simple, right? And what happened is, when mobile came along after, can you believe the Wii was 13 years ago?
Incredible.
It doesn't seem like that long, but that's how long it's been. And then about 10 years ago, now all the casual players moved over to mobile, right? So that's where the mobile industry, and the mobile industry is twice as big, over twice as big as the console industry is now. It's almost three times greater than the PC industry is. So as much as people and, you know, the hardcore gamers, love to, you know, they're very, you know, proud. And I'm a hardcore gamer myself too. And it's like, yeah, you know, we rule. But the reality is that the money, most of the money that's made does not come from hardcore gamers at all. In fact, it's the opposite. It comes, you know, from casual gamers. There's 200 million hardcore gamers in the world, but 3 billion people that play mobile and casual games every day. And so if you look at the greatest selling games of all time, you see Tetris, you know, Wii Sports is up there. You know, it's these casual experiences with a few exceptions. But even like the number one played game in the world is actually solitaire. It's a card.
Wow,
it's a casual card game, right? And so that's the thing, that the problem with mobile and casual gaming these days is that it's solitary. Every single casual game on your mobile device is just you and a mobile and you with a screen, and that's it. Yeah, you can play multiplayer online stuff. I'm talking about people getting in a room, communicating, punching your buddy in the arm, teasing your mom or your brother or whatever, you know, when you beat them or whatever. This doesn't exist in the casual market anymore, and it hasn't in 13 years. And that's the whole point of Intellivision, bringing people back together, giving those experiences to folks. And now people will say to me, hey, look, Tommy, I play Super Smash Brothers with my friends on the Switch all the time. What the hell are you talking about? Smash Brothers is not a casual game. Right? I'm talking about games that you can play with your mom, that you can play with your grandfather or your little niece that comes over, whatever it is. I'm talking about playing games with non-gamers and everybody's on the same level, right?
Yeah.
This doesn't exist anymore because Super Smash Brothers, Fortnite, I don't care, Call of Duty, you name the game. If you have a friend that comes over who doesn't play video games, and you expect them to jump into Fortnite and have a fun time with you, you're sadly mistaken. And those are the types of games that, yes, they exist, but they're hard to find, right? And the controls on the home systems, and I even include the Switch on this, the controls aren't very intuitive for non-gamers. You cannot put a PlayStation 4 or Xbox One controller in a non-gamer's hand and expect them to like pick it up and think it's, you know, amazing. They're petrified. They're terrified of it. Too many buttons, you know? So this is the thing about, you know, Intellivision that, and I've been saying this for 10 years now, about 7 years since the Wii kind of started to tail off. I've been saying, my gosh, I look around E3 and Gamescom and all these things, and I can't play any of these games. There's not a single game I can play with my non-gaming friends. I want to be able to play games with my mom and dad and my little, you know, 4-year-old nephew. And I can't. I can't. You know, so that's what kind of sparked the whole idea. And myself, me and Keith Robinson had spoke about this before he passed away. And, you know, cause I had approached him with this concept. I'm like, look, I'm a really great business guy, do pretty well in marketing. I know everybody in the industry. I can raise some money, a lot of money, and let's go do this. So we were talking about it and he was very excited about it, even before he passed away. So, at this point, I feel like, you know, we want to change the world. We want to use technology to bring people back together, because in the 21st century, it is so sad that technology and screens and everything are splitting people apart. They're, you know, video games are splitting people apart, you know? So it's just kind of crazy to me where, you know, I don't know. I just want to do something different and better. And this is my way of, you know, bringing the world back together and making video games more of a thing that everybody enjoys, but together, not just mobile, you know?
So it's interesting that you had the idea. I always just assumed that it was an Intellivision idea and they sought you out, but obviously that's not the case. Why did you think that Intellivision was the right vehicle for your idea?
Because the original Intellivision was based around family. I mean, you look on the box of the original Intellivision system and you tell me what you see. You see a mom, a dad, a brother and a sister.
The TV advert as well is exactly the same, isn't it? The old TV spot from the 70s.
Exactly. It's everybody kind of together playing, family, bringing people together, you know? And that was always the mantra of Intellivision, you know, back then. You know, Atari, which was an amazing company, their whole thing was more about bringing the arcade into the home. You know, they had all the best licenses, Space Invaders and Asteroids and Centipede and Pac-Man and all that stuff. And so, you know, that was their whole mantra. But Intellivision was, hey, look, we got great sports games that you can all play. I mean, there were a lot of Intellivision games, I'm sure you know, where you had to have a second player, right?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You couldn't play baseball by yourself or hockey or
soccer.
You know, Utopia, one player sucked, yeah. Right? You could do it, but you didn't want to, you know. So, I mean, that was the thing, right? So that to me, no other company from back then, screams family, being together, multiplayer than in television.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so I've so researching this interview, I've been looking at your career and listening to some of your older interviews, and I know that you love being the underdog.
Yes. But I have been my whole life.
But before you got involved in television, it seems to me that you'd stop being the underdog because you've got Guinness World Records. You are an award-winning video game composer. You've just talked about your achievements, your amazing achievements with Video Games Live. Is this a case of you chasing that underdog spirit again because you want to feel like an underdog?
Yeah, the reality is that no matter how many times I've proved people wrong, I still am the underdog. It doesn't matter. I was the very first, game composer to ever put out a video game soundtrack album worldwide on Capitol Records. And that was in 1994, and people thought I was nuts. They're like, are you kidding me? Who the hell would ever want to listen to video game music outside of a game? And now it's become commonplace. Then when I started the TV shows, people were like, are you insane? Who the hell would want to watch somebody play a video game or watch information about how a video game is made? Now with Twitch TV and YouTube, all of a sudden we weren't so crazy, but we were 20 years ahead of our time. And then with Video Games Live, the very first touring video game symphony show. And people were like, are you nuts? Now you've lost your mind. Now you finally went crazy, because people who go to a symphony, they don't play video games. And people who play video games, they don't go to a symphony. So you're totally screwed. No one's going to show up to your dumb thing. And then here we are breaking Guinness World Records. But you'll notice a theme of all of these things is that my goal and vision and passion is to bring video games to the masses, not just for hardcore gamers. And I'm not trying to like downplay hardcore gamers. Like I said before, I'm one of them. You're one of them, right? But have we sectioned ourselves off in the industry so much so that everybody's so trapped in their little bubble of hardcoreness that you've ignored all of the other people in the world who would love to play but can't because you've made it too difficult, too expensive, too intimidating. And so that's the thing. So I'm always the underdog no matter what I do, And by the way, I've been like that my whole life. I'm 5'5" and no one took me seriously, growing up. I always had to speak louder and run faster and, tell the funnier jokes or whatever. I was always, and that's part of my Napoleon complex, which I embrace and has worked in my favor. But I see where you're going with the question. I never view myself as, but I like how you're saying, like, maybe am I just trying to be the underdog
almost subconsciously chasing that feeling,
Maybe you're right. Maybe I just feel the most comfortable when I'm in that underdog zone. It makes me, because I can tell you, I work about 20 hours a day.
Yeah, you come out swinging, I can tell.
6-7 days a week. And I'm like, yeah, I because I'm passionate about it and I love it. And nothing's going to stop me from achieving my goal. I look at this like a mountaintop and I'm going to climb that mountain and there's no hurricane or rocks that can fall on me or people that can drag me down. They might, you might trip along the way, but there is nothing that is going to stop me from succeeding and getting to the top of that mountain. Period. End of story. Because when people fall down, we get up and we keep going and nothing's going to stop me. I'm not going to hit a barrier and go, oh no, what do we do now? There's ways around it. When you meet the barrier, you climb over it, you walk around it, you dig under it if you have to, but there's always a way past it. And that comes with a level of confidence, not arrogance. But you need to have a level of confidence to believe in yourself, knowing that, you know what? I've been down this road before. Everybody, you know, there's a section of people out there who are negative, who are going to hate on me, who are going to hate the idea, try to tear us down as much as they can. And to me, that's a little bit fuel for my fire. You know, it's a fuel for my fire. So, you know, so many times in the past for 30 years, I've been making, you know, internet haters, or people of the sorts, eat their words so why is now any different? Now it's just on a bigger scale because now people really think I've lost my mind. How the hell can you possibly go up against somebody like a Microsoft and Sony and Nintendo and who the hell even knows what Intellivision is, you idiot? And what you think you're going to be able to sell this? What is it going to be, a bunch of 50-year-old guys living in their mom's basement who are going to buy this thing? You moron. You know, so. I mean, you know, that's kind of, you know, some of the kickback we get on places like Twitter. But the reality is that all, you know, I would say 95% is all overwhelmingly positive. I mean, you can't begin to imagine. I mean, you know what? Just go on our YouTube page, look at any of our videos, and read what the comments have to say, you know? And so it's like the negative ones might be the most vocal, you know, screaming on their heads off on Twitter or whatever. But the reality is, look on our videos. Look at what the like to dislike ratio is. It's 94% or whatever. Look at the thousands of positive comments. And maybe there's, you know, 5% that are negative. But people want this. People have been waiting for this, and moms who have kids, you know, because again, people say, oh my God, you're making everything E10 or E10 plus or like Peggy 7.3 over there in the UK. You know, what a stupid idea. But well, wait a second before you go off on your rant. 85% of all video games currently right now are rated E for everyone or E10 plus. I'm not going to be able to kill and use bad language and have sexual content. No!
That's the point.
Yeah.
Go and play Grand Theft Auto if you want that.
You have all the other choices for that. And if that's what you're into, fine, I get it. Then you're not going to find our machine to be the one for you, maybe. And that's fine. But don't tell me I'm an idiot because I'm doing that, you know. So it's kind of fun. It's all good fun for me.
but how do you stay true to your vision? Because you clearly know what kind of product you're trying to deliver. Yet we live in an age where anybody can rush to judgments. And I know that you guys have only released limited information on what the Amico is going to be. And you're out there spreading the word. But you've got people, and I don't want you to comment on any recent particular incidents, but you've got people who are rushing to judgment. But because of the age we live in, those people can communicate those views to
pathetic,
tens of
it?
Thousands of people.
Hundreds of thousands. Sometimes.
Yeah, in 15, 20 minutes, and you cannot control that. How do you not react to that and think, am I doing the right thing? Is this the right product?
Well, because I mean, I'm always true to myself. I don't listen to that, you know. Again, if anything, I use it for the fuel, you know, when it's 2 a.m. and I'm starting to get a little tired and I have one other important thing to do, I think of those idiots online, right? Those negative haters online. And it'll get me going. Yeah, but you know, but really, you know, it really is about the vision. It's about being true to myself, about, you know, having the passion and knowing what I feel is right. Like I said, I have a pretty good track record. I don't think it's arrogant of me to say, but I have a pretty good track record over the last 30 years of kind of, you know, doing something that other people appreciate and like. again, whether it's video game music, whether it's video game television shows and content, or, you know, a live touring show around the world, I have a pretty good track record, right? I think that's a fair comment to say.
I think you're pretty proven.
And so I feel just as passionately about any of those products as I do with this one. In fact, even more, because it's so clear. It is so obvious that people want something different. And again, I'm not talking about the hardcore people who are going to rush out to buy PlayStation 5 and Xbox 2 or whatever, Project Scarlet, whatever. I'm not talking about those people. I'm talking about the 3 billion people who play games every day on their mobile devices, don't consider themselves gamers. They don't like home consoles. And there's a damn big reason for it. And I think I know all the answers why they don't, because I'm kind of one of them. I'm, again, I play all the old consoles, but when I want to play with somebody who's not a gamer, there's nothing I can turn on and play.
Sure.
I mean, again, there's some exceptions. People are going to say, oh, there's nothing. What about so-and-so? Look, I'm saying generally.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So you've identified this gap in the market. You've got an idea for a product, and you've taken it to Intellivision. Now, at that point, you're thinking, well, how can we fund this? Now, you could have done a Kickstarter. You could have done an Indiegogo. You chose not to. Why?
A couple reasons. So first of all, I've raised over $1 million on Kickstarter just for music. For my video games live albums, level 3, 4, 5, and 6, all Kickstarter. I also produced BT's last album as well, Electronic Opus, where we raised almost $300,000 on Kickstarter. So I know Kickstarter inside and out, and in fact, I've raised more money on Kickstarter as a musician than any other person in the world. There's no other person has raised as much money on Kickstarter. So I know Kickstarter, right? So if anyone was going to crowdfund the thing, it could have been me, right? But I saw what happened with the Ouya. I saw what was going on with Atari. And I saw the Coleco Chameleon. And I said, look, to me, if you have a great idea, a couple of things. The reality is a couple million bucks ain't doing shit. When a company like Atari goes, oh, $3 million, isn't this great? It's like, yeah, you're about 27 million short. Right? I mean, so to me, crowdfunding would have gave me a couple million bucks maybe, but a truly great idea, a big, big idea like this. If you have a great idea and you believe in it and you can show it, then that's when you go to venture capitalists and investment bankers. These are smart money people. So if you truly have an incredible idea, there's no reason to ask people to buy something before they've had a chance to play it. And that's one thing. That was my biggest thing of not doing a Kickstarter. I didn't want to ask people to give me money for a video game machine, because it's all about, you got to be able to hold it in your hand. And by the way, I could create the greatest hardware in the world, but if you don't have the games, then that's not going to matter, right? So you have to play the games. And I didn't feel comfortable asking people to give me money to create something that they couldn't play first. So that was my biggest reason, you know? I mean, I'll put it to you another way. I look at Intellivision. I want to be right up there with the big three: Nintendo, Microsoft, and Sony. Would Nintendo do a Kickstarter? Would Microsoft do a Kickstarter? Of course they wouldn't. And to further prove that, where I'm going with that is that if you look at the ESA, the Entertainment Software Association, and you go on their page of all the people who are in the ESA, there are 4 hardware manufacturers: Sony, Microsoft, Nintendo, and us. And that's it. You know, that's the reason why we had a booth at E3 this year and other folks didn't, right? Because they're not even part of the ESA. So there's a big difference between showing a video game console in a hotel room a few blocks away and actually being on the floor at E3. So that's the level of serious that we are about this. And by the way, we're also, you know, we're not contracting people, you know, part-time to create the architecture. We have 30 full-time employees. We have teams of engineers, hardware engineers, software engineers, firmware engineers, operating system folks, mechanical engineers, design people, teams of them who are full-time employees with full benefits, all working on this system. You know, that's a real hardware company.
Yeah, you've just immediately differentiated your company from the company that sits behind the current Atari VCS, haven't you? Because there was what I was surprised this week was that they actually only have 3 direct employees in the whole company. So it's refreshing actually to hear you talk about your direct employees and that you're not just contracting this stuff out.
And I'll tell you what, they all have full benefits as well. And that's very rare for a company, a startup company, in essence, you know, with no revenue, zero revenue coming in. Most of the time people are like, oh, here, we'll give you a pile of stock and we're going to pay you less, till the product comes out. We're the exact opposite of that. Again, I always think to myself, what would Nintendo or Sony or Microsoft do whenever I have a question about something, you know? And again, it's a long process and I'm going to stumble along the way. The company is going to stumble along the way. We're not going to get everything right and perfect, the first time. I could tell you 5 or 6 things that I've done wrong over the last 6 months. And I have no problem talking about it. But I can learn from those things and, you know, say, oh, that's good info for me to know. I'll give you one example. Our website, right? So when we first launched the trailer and our press release and stuff, I'm like, you know what? We just got to get up a website. We don't really have any money because we're spending money on the important stuff, hardware and stuff like that, right? And employees and all this kind of stuff. So we just kind of did the marketing ourselves, really, before we had marketing people. So, okay, me and my buddy Paul, who's one of the VPs of Intellivision, we're like, who owns an IT company and all this stuff. We're like, hey, we'll throw something up on Wix. Okay, good. We went on Wix. We did the thing. We stayed up a couple nights and just put it up ourselves because we didn't have anyone else who could do it for us. And then we, you know, kind of changed it around a little bit here and there, but we didn't have a professional website. And, you know, people started to hit us for this saying, gosh, you know, I go to their website and it looks like some crap, you know, that somebody threw up in 24 hours. And it's like, yes, because we did. And the reason we didn't care too much about it at the time was because we haven't started our marketing yet. We won't start spending marketing money till next summer, right? Then we'll launch our $11 million marketing plan just in the US alone, North America alone. You know, then we need to get up and then we need to have our website running and this and that. So that was my thought. And then it's like, God, people keep talking about it. You know what? They're right. What would Nintendo do? If Nintendo was starting up, they wouldn't have some ghetto ass website up there, you know? So I listened to the constructive criticism I was getting, which I welcome, by the way, as long as it's constructive and not like, you know, just negative, just to be hateful. And so we're like, okay, good. So, you know, we launched a couple of days ago, as I'm sure you're aware. We launched our new website, which now looks professional and it looks amazing, and we're very happy with it. So those are the kind of things. So, you know, we're learning as we go, you know, and there's nothing wrong with admitting you were wrong. And as long as you can fix it and prove that, oh, boom, get it. Okay, cool. Now, what do you think of this, guys? How about this website? Oh, wow. Okay. You listened, you pivoted. And now you made it better. This is great. And I think that's important for any company to be open like that, you know?
Yeah, sure. I run a business myself. And I know from my own experience that sometimes admitting you're wrong and actually you've made a misstep can be one of the hardest things to do. But let's talk about the Amico itself. So I know that you're limited in terms of what you can tell us at this point. But
I'll tell you as much as I can.
Okay, thank you. And you're going to give us at least one exclusive, aren't you, at some stage?
You know me. I mean, I got a big mouth. I can't help it. At one point, I'm going to drop something I shouldn't have, and I'll let you know. I'll say, oh, by the way, that was the exclusive I wasn't supposed to talk about. So you'll get one.
I can't wait.
It's only a matter of time.
So tell us a little bit about the hardware. You've talked about Microsoft and Sony and Nintendo, and we've seen the videos that have come out over the past 18 months or so. But tell us a little bit about what we can expect with the actual hardware itself. I've seen somewhere, and I can't remember where, there was some kind of claim, 1,000 sprites moving around the screen at once. Now, I can imagine that there wouldn't be much left to see if there was 1,000 sprites. But yeah. What can we expect from graphics and sound and the actual feel of the hardware?
For sure. You know, here's the thing. I want to preface this by saying, and this is not a cop-out at all. It's honest to true answer, is that we're not about specs. You know, like our let me restate that. Our strength is not power, right? And so, and by the way, the reason that was a very conscious decision, because if we wanted to bring power, now you're talking a machine that's going to be 250, 300 quid at least, right? And so we made a conscious effort. And we looked at this for many, many months, teams of people. I mean, if you can imagine the amount of research that went into, we need to pick a chip that is good enough for, you know, that's good enough, that's going to do what we want to do, but that's at a price point where we can keep the final retail price where we need it to be. So there's this massive balancing act that you have to do. Now, the reality is that our controllers are amazing. They're like mobile devices without the 4G. I mean, you have a color touchscreen, gyroscope, accelerometer, speaker, microphone. They're automatic wireless charging, which no other video game controller has done inside a console, right? Force feedback. It's got everything that a mobile phone does, right? And you're getting two of them. And we're talking about a price point of around $200, right? So that in itself goes to show how we want to really change the game. We're not a greedy company. We're not. And again, it's not to say that the other companies are being greedy. Well, they are when it comes to digital downloads, because they know damn well they've cut out the middleman, yet the games are still $60. But anyway.
Yep.
But
Nintendo, we're looking at you.
Well, I'm looking at Sony and Microsoft, but okay. Yeah, we'll throw Nintendo in there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what I did. I downloaded Zelda and I paid $60. But anyway, the reality is that those machines have so much amazing quickness. And, you know, so much so that they have to put fans in the system. And, you know, it's crazy, crazy, all the tech and who can get the most tech in here, that they have to sell at those prices because they're actually barely making any money. And in some instances, losing money on their hardware, right? Even though they're so expensive. So for us, we made a conscious effort to say, let's pick a chip where developers can have fun. But that, you know, we're not going to compete with those guys. I'd be insane if I think I can compete with any of those companies in regards to power. So we're not about power. And one of the things that was kind of misquoted early on is that, you know, and by the way, not even, it was misquoted, but I said it wrong as well. So again, I'll take the blame for this. Even though I was still misquoted and then it went all over the place. What I was, the quote that came out was, and I never said this, was Tommy Tallarico says his machine is going to be faster than the PlayStation 5 and Xbox. And I'm like, no. So I'll explain the quote and what I meant to say. What I was trying to get across is that when you limit your system to 2D and 2.5D, and 2.5D basically being 3D, but a lockdown camera, right? So when you're doing games that are not 3D open world environments, right? Because when you go into that world, the costs go up massively. Now, you know, now you have to have a team of, you know, 30, 40 people working on the game for 2-3 years. I mean, the openness, you have to make sure, oh, and the lighting, the calculations that the chip has to do to calculate real time lighting on the fly, 5.1 audio moving around your system. When you go into that world, it makes games a lot more difficult. I mean, no one would disagree with that, right? And so what I was trying to get across is I say, when you focus on 2D and 2.5D, it makes games easier to make. The budgets don't have to be as big. And indie developers actually love working on a system like this more so. They'll be able to do more stuff, more fun stuff, because they're not worried about all of the 3D crap that they have to deal with and all the 3D this and the motion capture and this and that. And so that was what I was trying to say. But when you only have like 20 seconds to answer, it's like, oh yeah, indie folks love our stuff and they'll be able to do stuff better on our system. And that got translated to, oh, Tommy Tallarico says his system's better than, and it's going to be able to do a gazillion sprites and this and that. What I was saying was when you, the way we're creating some of our things, you'll be able to do 2D stuff a lot easier than doing it in other ways.
And is that the feedback you've had from the developers that they are experiencing those things that you've just been talking about when making the games for the Amico?
Absolutely, Chris. I can't begin to tell you how this translates and trickles down to a lot of the, because again, we go out and we handpick the developers and we get pitch stuff from indie developers all the time and we love it. And we encourage people. In fact, you can go on our new website and there's a developer place where you can, you know, sign up to get more information about how to become a developer.
So dev kits are out there, are they? They're kind of out there in the wild.
Well, to the folks that we've, we're going into manufacturing our dev kits, but we have a version of them that doesn't have the lights on them, for example, but they're the things that people are making games on. Our final dev kits are going into production in November. And so they'll be in the hands of folks as soon as the middle of November. Those will be the final dev kits. But yes, there are dev kits out there now, to our developers. But yeah, you know, and even that, we don't charge people for dev kits. We just give them to them, you know? So, but that's the one thing you'll find is that you talk to any of our developers and they love the whole idea of kind of working with constraints in a system. It within the hardware, it makes them feel like the old days, right? The Genesis, the Super Nintendo days, you know, where you had to be mindful of how you did things, and it makes you think, it makes you more creative. It makes it, you know, the artists do things out of the box that they normally wouldn't have done. And so it really is a joy for folks to be able to go back to that, you know, old way of thinking, because it's so easy. You know, you get caught up in, oh, Unreal 3D engine with the Xbox One. Well, I can just do a whole bunch of stuff now. And gosh, I wonder why all those games, you know, first-person shooters start to feel the same.
Yeah. You know? So are the developers in-house or are they all third party?
We have one in-house team, but everyone is external. But where it's kind of fun and cool is that our system, our architecture and everything is set up so that each one of our developers is like a first-party developer. Right. So we don't just allow any like EA, if they wanted to make a game for our system, they'd have to go through us. Right. It's not like they can just, you know, start putting stuff up and then uploading it like you can to mobile or Steam, even the Nintendo eShop to some extent. And so, you know, every game on Amico will be first party. Every game. And that's that kind of Nintendo mentality that I think we all miss. Cause back in the days, remember the Nintendo Seal of Quality?
Seal of Quality.
Yeah. Where the hell did that go? You know, we want to bring that back. We want to build trust and we want to build value. That's the most important thing. So when folks say, oh, you know, what's the specs and blah, 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 and this and that. Look, I can tell you some basic specs. We got an 8-core processor. That's pretty cool, right? 1.8, 1.9 gigahertz on there. You know, but 8 cores was important, you know, when we decided to do the way we're going to do it. And you know, we have amazing technology in the controllers, and you're getting two of them, not just one. The LED lights. See, Chris, I can't compete with those guys with power and money, but I can compete with them in ideas. And that's where we really feel like, you know, we're really, you know, doing something special and fun, is that the ideas that we're, that have been coming out of the architecture with the developers have been unbelievable. And it's stuff that you, I mean, think about it. Just think about this for a second. Everybody in a room, let's say you have four friends over, everybody's looking at a main TV, main screen, but you all have screens in your hand as well. Holy crap. Imagine the gameplay possibilities that could come from this. And what about our disc and the LED light? You probably saw that video that we came out with yesterday, right? And it shows the LED disc ring lighting up. Imagine if you're playing a game and you had to unlock a door by lights and combinations, something like Simon. Remember the old, you know, the Simon game or whatever, where you had to put in a combination, but you were looking at the disc to do it, right? Or you were getting hot or cold in a certain direction, and certain things started to appear on the lighting of the console and on the lighting of your controller. Or imagine you're playing 4-player Moon Patrol. Uh-oh, here comes the exclusive. And let's say you're playing 4-player Moon Patrol, and I'm blue, my controller's blue, yours is red, somebody else is green, and somebody else is yellow. And you say, well, Tommy, how the hell are you going to do a multiplayer couch co-op Moon Patrol? Well, every game has a single player, by the way, as well, too. But how do you do a multiplayer Moon Patrol? So I sat down, I said, I got to figure this out. Oh my gosh, I got it. Because of the way the architecture's set up, what if I'm the blue car, so I'm on screen first. Now, I can look at everybody else's controller, and I see a color. So I know that you're red. So the way it works is I'm traveling through the level, and you guys, all the gals and girls in the room are trying to stop me. You're all of the enemies. And I know who you are on screen because you're the red ship, because I can look on your controller and say, hey, he's the red guy. Son of a bitch, you got me, Chris. You know, and I can see the green guy. And then I'm trying to get as far as I can in the level. You're trying to stop me. Everybody's trying to stop me. Boom. Now I get stopped. And now it's your turn. And now the red car comes up, and now you know who I am because I'm the blue guy alien trying to stop you. So it's this kind of fun thing that it's like, because of the way we've set up the machine, it opens up so many new game design possibilities that were never possible, which would lead me quickly to Earthworm Jim. In Earthworm Jim, we're not just going to do another side-scrolling 2D platform game. None of us wanted to do that. That's been done to death, right? And even the original Earthworm Jim wasn't just that. You had the all the different mini levels and the bonus rounds and the, you know, Andy Asteroids and all that stuff. So we wanted to do something. We've literally been waiting 25 years for this console to be able to do the Earthworm Jim game that we all wanted to do.
Yeah. I want to dwell on this a little bit, Tommy, because for me, this is the magic. This is the thing where I can really see that you are doing something different to what's already there. So talk me through a situation where I've got two children. I've got a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old, and I have a wife who probably is the biggest non-gamer yep. you can ever imagine. My wife kind of takes one look at something like Candy Crush. She'll play it for 2 minutes and then she'll scream because she just gets so frustrated. But she really enjoys cards. She enjoys playing cards. And the kids don't enjoy it because now the kids are so used to having screens and they're constantly looking down at their iPads. So we only really play cards when we're on holiday and the kids don't have access to screens. Now, I'm setting you up a little bit here because I've heard you talk in the past about how that could work on the Amico. So for the benefit of our listeners, talk us through a situation like that and how the Amico could help.
Yeah, so we call it our Karma Gaming Engine.
I love that, by the way.
Yeah, and the Karma Gaming Engine isn't a real engine or real technology. It's just a mantra, right? And it's like blast processing on the Sega on the Mega Drive, right?
Meant nothing.
Yeah, meant nothing. Cool buzzword, but for us, it's a way that we need to think, right? And so the Karma Gaming Engine, what that basically means is, and again, it's a challenge to the developers. And I have my hand in every single game design that's on the machine right now. Every single game, I'm helping to design.
Crikey. No wonder you work 20 hours a day.
Yeah, right? So for example, let's take Pong is the easiest example. So if your wife walks in the room and she would have 0% chance of ever beating you in Pong, right? Because you're a gamer and she's not. Now, but what the Karma Gaming Engine does, it's basically a real-time on-the-fly handicapping system. So if you score 3 times in a row on her, your paddle shrinks and hers grows.
That's amazing. Right?
And it keeps going. She might be so bad that her paddle is now half the size of the screen and yours is the size of the ball, right? Right. But you're challenged. You're challenged and she's having fun because she's actually competing with you and beating you, right?
I'm crying at this point. I can say it.
So would your wife find entertainment in playing a game like that? And maybe not, but you know, like you said, maybe it's just cards. But why doesn't she like something simple and arcadey? Is it because she's not interested in it, or she knows she could never win in it? Right?
I don't think she's ever had a chance to experience something where she's been given the opportunity to have fun.
Exactly. That is the key. You just unlocked it right there. And that is our mantra. My biggest challenge was sitting down thinking, you know what? I want a grandfather or a grandmother to be able to play with their grandkid and the parent and all of them to have fun together. Because if you think about board games or the game of charades or Monopoly or Scrabble is a bad example, but you think of Monopoly and charades and things like that and card games take strategy, maybe a little bit of luck. But you never ever feel, unless it's like Texas Hold'em or something, you never feel like the person sitting next to you has a major advantage. Everybody's on the same footing. And that's what makes playing games together fun. And that's what video games have been ignoring for 30 years, right? And so how can we bring, you think about the word game. The concept of a game has been around thousands of years. And what is it consisted of? It's consisted of people getting, whether it's backgammon or whatever, you know, some of these ancient games that, from the Egyptians and all this. It was where people can get together in a game of skill, right? And who could better the other person, right? And that all kind of goes away in most video games. You're not in a room with people challenging each other and you're both on equal footing and who can get the better of the other person, right? And so I'll give you another example. Well, how can we do that? You remember the game Shark Shark for Intellivision?
Yes, I do.
I'm about to give you another exclusive. You get two this time. So in Shark Shark, you say, oh, and by the way, this is one of the games that tests better than all of our other games for families. This is one of the biggest family ones off the charts. So you say, okay, Shark Shark's a very simple concept. You eat all the fish that are smaller than you, and you have to stay away from the fish that are bigger with you. Now, when you have four people playing Shark Shark, and you have, and then all of a sudden I get bigger, now I can start eating all the people in my room, you know, all people in the room as well too. So that becomes fun, right? But here's the thing. There's going to be certain people who are going to be better at Shark Shark, right? But what we do is I'll give you an example. In the first level, you might be in a sunken treasure ship and there might be three sunken treasure chests and they open randomly. They will open throughout the gameplay and it'll have like a pearl, and a pearl will instantly grow one of the fish to the next level and give you a bunch of bonus points. So the pearls, we want them to be really fantastic, right? But they randomly appear in the treasure chests. Now, the treasure chests are three different colors. When the person in last place, their controller buzzes, and then you look on their screen, you can look on your screen, and it will tell you where the next treasure chest is opening in the next 10 seconds. So that person in last place can now prepare themselves and go, oh, holy shit, I know something that no one else knows. Doo-dee-doo-dee-doo, I'm starting to swim over here. No one pay attention to me, you know, because everybody's off trying to kill each other or whatever. You now have this advantage. And when that treasure opens, bam, you're right there. And now all of a sudden you have an advantage. The person in last place has now been catapulted up, right? But we just don't give them. They still have to earn it, right? And the other thing is the person, whoever's in first place, well, when that shark comes out, guess who it's going to be targeting more than anyone else? It's going to go after the person in first place, right? It's going to be more aggressive to that person. And so these are the types of challenges and things that as game designers, we sit down and go, how can we make this fun? We don't want to just cheat and just say, oh, the person in last place, the car in last place is now the fastest car. You know, no, we want to be able to give somebody something a little bit in an advantage, you know, that and a little bit of disadvantage to the person in last place. It's still challenging. Oh, shoot. But now the shark's more aggressive. So those are the types of things. Now, you mentioned card games as well. How great is this? Your wife has not been able to play a card game with your family because most card games in the same room, because most card games rely on knowing what your cards are that are hidden in your hand.
Yeah, of course. And you've only got one screen.
And there's only one screen. So every single Texas Hold'em game in the world of video games has been played online. And that's it. Imagine if you had, and it could be anything. It could be something as simple as, you know, a card game like War or Hearts or Spades or...
Yeah, any or card game, really.
Uno, whatever. Mm. Exactly. But now you all have your own controller in your hand and your own screen, and there's stuff that you can... For the first time, your wife's going to be able to play card games with you, you know, in the same room. So she's going to love this thing. But I also think she's going to love some of those simple games, fun games like Shark Shark. She's going to love it because she's never going to feel like she sucks and she's in last place.
if I can play something like Moon Patrol or Shark Shark with my wife, I feel like I'll feel like I've made it. But can you guarantee to us that, because I've seen your list of 10 commandments and I know that's probably a little
loose.
I know it's a little bit tongue in cheek. I can see that. But when you describe games like that in the way that you have, it really does. I mean, it feels like that's the magic. And because of the way in television are going to quality control these games, and you've said all games are going to be first party, are you able to guarantee that all games will have those kinds of, for want of a better word, sort of karma game features?
Oh, we're certainly going to try our hardest, you know, and even with the quality control thing, look, that's just a thing for us, right? That's just me basically saying, because everyone got bent, or not everyone, the Twitterverse, some folks got bent out of shape because they're like, oh, what's this quality control? What are they going to do? Blah, blah, blah. Who's going to decide? Blah, blah. It's like, look, all we're saying is we want to make the best possible games we can. And if something is mediocre, we'd rather kill the project than put out something that's mediocre, that's a 5 on a scale to 10. We don't want to put out anything average. Now, again, that's very subjective, right? So can I promise that every game is going to be a 10? No. What I can promise is that we're not going to put out crap, right? And I don't see what the problem is with people having a problem with that.
Does seem odd.
Right? It seems a little odd, doesn't it? That's the thing. And by the way, if there's a game that everyone's kind of like, yeah, it's kind of fun, it's about a 5 maybe, it's mediocre, 50%, whatever. If we can put more money into that and more time and more resources into it to get it up to where we feel it's, oh yeah, this is fun, you know. But not everyone is going to have the same thing. Some people might hate Match 3 games. Some people might love them. Some people might hate edutainment games. I don't want a stupid reading game. I don't even have kids. Okay, you might think that game's a 2 on a scale of 1 to 10.
It's subjective, isn't it? All of these
exactly.
things.
Exactly. But the reality is, if a little kid has fun with it, then he gives it an 8 out of 10, well, then we've won. So anyone, you know, it wouldn't be right to hold us to the scale to say, wait a second, that went well. Maybe somebody did, you know. But the whole idea is, let's not put out crap.
Yeah. So where will I get my games?
In two places. You'll be able to digitally download them, and all the digital download games will be $9.99 or less. And by the way, the system doesn't have to be connected, always connected to the internet as well. The only time you need to connect it to the internet is if you want to take advantage of the leaderboards, or download games. But we recommend connecting it to the internet. Just have it connected to Wi-Fi. No big deal, yeah. Right? Just set it up once. The reason we like it is because we're doing so many fun Easter eggs. Literally like on a weekly basis. And so, you know, when you turn your thing on, you might get a different logo than the one the previous week, you know, so we want to have fun with this. And you'll be able to see all the new games that come out, you know, and that's my other promise is that we're only going to have one game released at a time. There's never going to be a situation where there's going to be two games released. You want to know why? Because I don't care if you're an indie developer in a dorm room or you're Ubisoft, EA, or Activision, you will not be able to buy our, you know, that banner, right? We want to give everybody the same, because that's one of the biggest problems I see for developers is that there's some amazing things on Steam and the eShop on the Switch and even mobile that no one knows about, because it's just 1,000 games a day or whatever, 1,000 games a week come out. And that's a damn shame. And we're never going to do that. So when there's a new game that comes out on our system, everybody who turns the machine on is going to know about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
In that sense, do you think Apple Arcade has beat you to the market?
No, because, you know, and I love what Apple Arcade's doing, but the reality is this, is that you need to own an Apple to play it. Multiple Apple devices. My family doesn't have any. We're Droid and PC folks. And so there you go. So let me ask a question back to you. Is your family playing Apple Arcade right now?
Not yet.
Okay.
But I am tempted to get an Apple Arcade, but no, not yet.
Right. So, and by the way, as we know, Google has their Play Pass as well, which is kind of, you know, the thing. But here's the situation. You still have to have, like, how many couch co-op games are for Apple Arcade?
I suspect probably none. Well, very few.
There's very few, right? And how many of those games can a family of four sit in front of a television set in their living room and play with a tactile feedback controller? Right? So by the way, I love what they're doing, but and they're probably closer competition to us than the Xbox is, you know? But our thing is that you never have, you know, David Jaffe was over my house and he came to Intellivision a couple of weeks ago. He's a creator of God of War.
Yeah, God of War guy, yeah.
Twisted Metal. And what David loved the most about it is he said, you know what's great about this? He goes, you know, when I want to play a couch co-op game with my kids, he's got a couple of teenagers, because when we want to play games like that, you know what I have to do? I have to go on YouTube. I have to go online. I'm trying to find a couch co-op game. Because, you know, we're going to invest some time in this. And I want to be the cool dad. And we don't want to have to buy 7 or 8 games just to find that one good one and all that. And he goes, what I love about the system, he says, is that this is a place where when I want to play with other people in my family in the same room, I just turn it on. And I know that it's all just there. I don't have to go searching for it. Says, you know, and I think that's a big advantage. The light bulb went off when he said that. I'm like, gosh, I never even thought about that. You know, is that yes, there's couch co-op on the Switch, and the average person, non-gamer, isn't going to know where to find it. And they're not going to buy a Switch in the first place because they don't think of it as that. And again, same with Apple Arcade. Is Apple Arcade is awesome, amazing games that you play on your screen, on mobile. Is that the system where families are going to go to have family fun time? Is your wife going to say, hey, it's Friday night, everybody, let's jump on Apple Arcade?
I wish, but no.
and is your 6-year-old going to have, are you going to have 4 iPhones or 4, you know, $1,000 devices that you're in your 6-year-old's hand? What if she drops it?
She better not do.
Right? And then you're going to have, you know, and then, okay, well, we'll get an iPad now and this. So you see where I'm going? It's like,
I do
okay,
see what you mean, yeah.
How many devices do you have to have in your home for a family of four to play a game together? Well, you're going to have 4 devices that are at least $200 to $300 each. Right. So now a family of 4. And again, you know, me and you are different, right? Cause we're tech heads, right? We probably do have 3 or 4 extra cell phones hanging around, right? Or iPads or this and that. But think of middle America. We call it middle America. Middle Essex or whatever.
There is the equivalent. Yeah.
The equivalent is over in the UK. You know, think about the average. And by the way, all over Europe as well, you know, the coastlines of the US and the folks in London and the major metropolitan cities in Europe, they're spoiled, right? We're spoiled. I'm one of those people, right? But think of all the other people, maybe the folks who have to save up $200 to buy something for the family for Christmas, right? You know, think about those people, and that's who we're thinking about, you know? And so that's the thing, you know, if a family of four wanted to play a game on the Switch and they all had controllers and watching a main TV, well, how can you do that? I guess you'd need to buy two Switches at least, right?
So out of the box, day one, I'm going to have two controllers with the Amico, aren't I?
Yes.
And then I know from what you've released that I will have the option then for additional controls on a mobile device.
Yep.
Will I be able to buy extra physical, proper Amico controllers?
Yes, absolutely. And we're going to keep them as cheap as we humanly can. Because as you know, you want a first-party controller for an Xbox, they start at $80. And by the way, they go up to $200, don't they?
Yes, right? They do.
I mean, this is getting out of control. For us, we want a group of people to be able to play the machine right out of the box.
Okay. And physical media with the games, or is it just download only?
I'm sorry. Yes, that was the second part of my question I never got to because I talked too long.
We're segueing all over the place here. Don't worry.
Right. So yeah, absolutely. The reality is that you're also going to be able to buy certain physical games and physical media, and you'll be able to collect them as well. Now those are going to be more expensive than $9.99 just because of the reality of retail, creating something, and then the stores need their 100% markup and this and that. So, you know, you're probably looking at something, you know, $19-$20 range for those, but we want to make them special and we want to make them limited edition. We want to make them, you know, something that's really, really super unique that is a collectible.
Yeah. What will the media be? What will it be? SD card or?
That I can't tell you because of patent pendings. But what I'll be able to tell you is this. It could be anything we want it to be.
Okay. Okay.
So there you go.
Online multiplayer, yes or no?
No, not initially. Originally, I said, yeah, let's do it. And then there's two main reasons. I'm going to be as honest. I'll always be honest with you no matter what. You ask me any questions as hard as you can. I'll always answer it. The honest answer. Two main reasons. One, multiplayer online. When you put this into any video game, I don't care what it is, you just doubled your budget for that game and you doubled the complexity of the engine and you doubled the time it takes to make the game. So that's one bad thing about online from a creator standpoint. Two, wait a second. Our whole idea is bringing people in a room together. Why, you know, don't we want to focus on that first? Right? Because that's the whole differentiator for us. My thought is on this is that we're going to launch the thing with leaderboards and couch co-op, local multiplayer. And if people really, really want it and say, gosh, Tommy, I love this thing, but boy, I'd sure like to play in television baseball or soccer with you, then we'll start to think about if it's overwhelming and the people who want it really bad, then we'll figure it out. Then we'll say, okay, we're going to let's build an online baseball game or an online soccer game that comes out. And maybe it has to be a little more expensive to cover costs or whatever, but one thing I never want the system to be is where it's just open to anyone. Meaning, you know, I mean, the toxicity, is that right?
Toxicity?
Is that a word? We just made one up.
I think so. We just made it up. But yeah. Let's go with it.
Yeah. of online, you know, it's horrible. It's that, and that's on all the systems who do it, right? And so the way I would approach it is kind of like Facebook in that I send you a friend request because I know you, you accept it, and now me and you can play. And if we want three or four of our other friends to play around the world, then we send them. I never want it to be an open environment. people should never feel bullied when they play video games.
I completely agree. Yeah. Yeah. I asked you the question, actually, and I don't actually play online multiplayer games at all.
Yeah.
For all of those reasons.
Yeah.
And also because I hate getting my ass handed to me by probably 12-year-old kids on the other side of the world. So
with foul mouths. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I've learned words that I would never have known existed if it wasn't for the online world. Okay. So when can we get our hands on it? Now, I know this date, but I think it would sound much better coming from you. So when can we get our hands on the thing?
10/10/2020 is the launch date, and we're releasing in North America and Europe. That is the game plan right now. Potentially Australia. I don't think I've talked about this, so this might be a third exclusive.
Here we go.
Potentially Australia as well, and the Middle East.
What about Japan?
So Japan is interesting. We have a lot of friends in Japan, a lot of licenses in Japan, and we think we'll do well in Japan, but we're not prepared to release in Japan right away because we need, once the machine's done, because the other thing is we don't want to do too much at once, right? You know, we are still, like I say, the underdog. We're not established. We don't have 400 people working for us, right? Hopefully that'll change. But until then, we have to be very careful on what we focus on, which is the other reason why we didn't want to do multiplayer online out of the box. Too much other things to get right, right? We don't want to stumble and do it half-assed. We're very, very focused. And so with Japan, it's interesting because we've done some market research, and the thing about Japan, which is very different from Europe and anywhere else in the world, is that when friends get together in Japan, they do it outside of their homes.
Gaming centers, they call it, don't they?
Yes, because homes are so small, right, over there. And so we're not sure, and again, I'm being very honest, we're not sure that the system would be popular over there because we need to see, will a system bring people together in small homes over there? Well, the system's really small. The controllers are very mobile-like friendly. So maybe it will, you know, but we don't want to like stake our claim and have to manufacture and then end up, you know, failing because we didn't know the market. So we need to approach Japan slowly. Same thing with China.
Yeah, interesting. Okay. So, conscious of time, what does commercial success look like for Intellivision?
Commercial success would mean from a financial standpoint?
Yeah.
If we sell 100... Let me see. I want to get the number right. I think it's like 113,000 or something. But if we sell around 100,000 units, the company breaks even.
That's quite modest, isn't it? It's quite a low number.
It is because of the way we're doing things and doing it, you know, doing it the right way. So you know that would be considered doing well. If we do double that, well, then then you get into the tens of millions of dollars of profit for the company. You know
I know that's the kind of corporate, that's the break even point.
Yeah.
When you think about success, what do you think about what good will really look like? However many,
I'm a big believer in positive mental attitude. If you've ever seen or watched the movie or read the book, The Secret, you'll know everything you'll need to know about me and how I think. I recommend it to everyone. And it's all about positive, having a positive mental attitude, having a vision board, right? And so I have a vision board. I'm looking at it right now. And it has certain things. And every year I change it. And I look at it and I focus on it every single day. And I say to myself, what can I do today to make sure I earn these goals, right? And so to me, I don't if anyone thinks I have 250,000 units on that board, they don't know me very well. right? And so to me, I'm going to think in my head, I want to think 100 million units.
Why not?
Why wouldn't I? That's what the Wii did, right? And so, and so I'm going to get a lot of flack for that. People say, well, hey, but that's my dream. There's no, you can't tell me I can't have a dream. Are you going to say you can't have that dream? You know, that what kind of cruel, inhumane person would say that to another person, right? You know, you shouldn't dream. You know, that's the thing that, you know, fascism at its finest right there, right? And so to me, I like to dream big. What would I think? What would I be happy with? I'd be happy, you know, the original Intellivision sold over 3.5 million units. If we could do that, boy, that'd be really cool. But Atari sold around, I think it was 15 to 18 million units, right? If I could beat what the original Atari did, that would be pretty fun. You know, people say the Dreamcast is a big failure, and the Sony, what was that handheld? Not the PSP.
PSP, the Vita.
The Vita. You know, people say the Vita and the Dreamcast and the Wii U were huge failures, right? I'll tell you what, if I can fail like they did, I'd be very happy because all those products did around 12 to 15 million units. So if that's what a failure is in the video game industry, bring it on.
And with keeping it clean, what do you say to those that write this off before they've seen it as another Coleco Chameleon, or I don't want to prejudge what's going to happen with the VCS, or
you might as well.
It's going, or well, or it's going the way of the VCS. What do you say to those people?
I'd say, first of all, we're not crowdfunded. We have internal people, you know, stuff I said earlier. We're completely different companies. We're completely different approaches. But, you know, so to lop us in with that is just, you're not doing your research. Just do a little research, right? Off the top, and you'll find that it's completely different. But that being said, and I would say this to any new machine, I'd say this to folks who hate on the Atari VCS, I'd say, you know what? Let's wish everyone well. Why do people find joy in destroying things? What in hating things? Wouldn't it be great if 7 or 8 amazing, successful video game machines were out there and everybody got, like, look at automobiles. What if you only had three cars? What if Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo only made 3 cars and that's all you could drive? And 2 of those 3 were super fast Formula One cars that were only single seaters. Right? What if that was, you know, why do people find joy in hating? It's just not in my vernacular. So I just don't understand those types of folks. It's like, you know, over here in America right now, for example, one of the biggest or the biggest video game only retailer is called GameStop. I don't know if you have those over there or if you're familiar with GameStop.
I am familiar with GameStop. We have something similar called Game.
Game, of course. Yeah. Yeah. Is that the one that has like pink?
Yes.
Yeah. The colors are pink. I know. I know.
Pink and purple.
Pink and purple.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so over here, people love to tear down GameStop. And they're like,
game.
Oh, is a game over there the same? Okay.
Yes.
And maybe they don't hit all the things out of the park every time. Maybe they do some cringy things for hardcore gamers, right? But why in the hell would you want the only most successful nationwide video game only retailer to go out of business? Why do you think that's a good thing? Right? And it's the same thing. Why do you want Atari VCS to fail? Why do you want Intellivision Amico to fail? Why would you want that? Who cares if maybe it's not for you? Right? Maybe it's for your nan And what's wrong with that? Why do you feel so violated that your grandmother maybe wants to play a video game system like she did the Wii and she wants to go bowling? What's wrong with that? You know, so that's, I tell those people, think about what you're saying, right? And think about what you're wanting and then do a deeper dive and say, why do I feel like that? Do I feel threatened? Like a lot of hardcore gamers hate mobile games. I hate mobile games. Ah, blah, 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 blah. Why do you feel threatened that other people are getting enjoyment who aren't like you? Isn't that being, in a way, racist? Are you a gaming racist?
We could go a long way with this.
Right? It's the same people like, you know, I hate this religion or I hate that religion. Only my religion is the best religion. Well, then you're a racist to religion, aren't you? I mean, and of course, the biggest one being politics. You know, and everybody's dividing themselves in politics and religion and all, even music. People can't even decide, you know, some people love country music and love speed metal and other people freaking hate it. Hate it. Well, why do you want to hope that country music is wiped off the face of the earth? Why would you want that? You know?
Yeah. And Tommy, I just want to finish off by asking, we put a message out. We have a Discord channel for our podcast, and we put a request out to that channel for some questions. Now, we received a bunch of questions, but to be honest, most of them we've covered in the conversation.
Tell
but
me the ones we haven't.
Let me just put two or three to you quickly.
Sure. Yeah.
One of our listeners, PhoenixZ80, he asked two questions. His first one is, can you offer any kind of guarantees that the UK will have sufficient stock quantities to fulfill demand on launch date? And he also says, PS, save me one of the vintage wood grain ones. Now you don't have to do that.
Can I guarantee that? The answer is no. I mean, I'm being honest. Because how could I, right? Yes, we're going to take pre-orders and that'll give us a thing, but you have to understand we're going into manufacturing to get on the shelves for 10/10/2020. We go into manufacturing in March, because you have to, but we don't do our marketing until the summer. Right? You don't want to do marketing 9 months before a product comes out. You don't want to spend money on TV ads and influencers talking about it and this and that, right? We have to be conservative with our numbers. You have to be when you do retail and especially very expensive hardware, a hardware thing. We're not selling, you know, $2 widgets here, right? Or cans of whatever, you know, drinks or something.
It's investors' money, isn't it, that you're spending as well?
I mean, think of it. If it costs $120 to make a console and we have to make a million of them to spread around the world, where's that $120 million coming from? You know, and we have some great partners that are, you know, willing to take some risk with us, which is amazing. So that becomes important. So I can't guarantee it, because what if the greatest thing on earth happens and everybody wants one? How fast can we manufacture now to keep up with the pre-orders and keep up with the orders? So on launch, I can't honestly give you, because most people will say, oh yeah, they'll give you some runaround, right? They'll say, oh, well, we're going to do this and that. Look, you know, I don't know the answer, and I couldn't in good conscience say that we'd be able to promise that, because we can't.
Will you manufacture in the US and then ship over to Europe?
No. We would do a special thing for the Europe territories. They'll be coming from somewhere else.
Okay, interesting. Okay, and his second question.
By the way, I'd tell you where it is, but I don't know yet. Because of all the stuff that's happening with China and the tariffs, and there's so many. By the way, it's the reason you don't know the PlayStation 5 and Scarlett, why they haven't released their prices yet. Because I got news for you, they don't know.
Interesting, yeah.
Because, well, none of us know, right?
Yeah, sure thing, yeah. And then we've got a little thing going on over here called Brexit, which I won't even begin to start about. But yeah, I'm sure that's weighing in on people's decision-making as well.
It really, really is. It really is.
Okay, his second question then. Other than mobile phones, are there plans to be able to connect other types of devices to the Amico to use as extra controllers? I struggle with touchscreen devices, and I'd like to be able to connect my button controller via cable or Bluetooth if possible, please.
Yes, it's possible, but you won't want to do it.
because of the particularities of the Intellivision controller.
You're going to want the screen. Just because you have a screen doesn't mean you have to touch it. You know, you're going to want it for information, you know. But the answer to the question is yes, but with the caveat that I don't think you'll want to.
Okay, interesting. And finally, from our Discord group, as I said, we did cover all the other ones in our conversation. Zombie Zaffod, the wonderful
Zaffod Beeblebrox, yes.
And he's an Australian user as well, so this is one of the Australian guys who will be very cheered, I suspect, by the news that you dropped earlier. He says, can you ask Tommy if the list of commandments comes from personal philosophy or market research?
Both. Absolute both. And I'll tell you how. I created those commandments based on personal philosophy, and then we did a bunch of market research to see if everybody, you know, what the average Joe on the street thought, and it tested through the roof. So again, we knew we were on to something when like, wow, yes, this is a thing. You know, it's not just me who thinks this. It's the majority of people on the planet.
Yeah. And I suppose we'll find out, won't we, next year and beyond, whether it bears out on a much bigger scale.
Absolutely. I mean, we have to execute, you know, we have to make a great product, and the commandments might be right, but if we don't execute them properly, you know, if we fail on two or three of those, then it's not necessarily the concept that's flawed. It was the execution, and that's my responsibility.
Yeah. So I've been trying to keep my own personal opinion out of this while we've been chatting. But can I be honest with you?
Hit me.
So before I got into this, when we started talking about chatting to you about the Intellivision, I must say my initial view was one of skepticism.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to be one of those people that would just rush out to judgment, because I have to confess, other than seeing the videos which you put out, I didn't know anything about the thing. So I then started to do some research, and I then started to read, and I started to listen to some of the things that you've been saying. And I must say, I've gone from being quietly skeptical to quietly quite excited. And I've been telling people, and you'll be used to this, but every time I mention, yeah, there's a new console coming from Intellivision, oh, you're joking.
Right.
Why? Yeah, that is the initial reaction. And I know that you are getting out ahead of that. And it's probably why you're talking to us now, because you feel almost with, and you've said yourself, the campaign to market this thing hasn't even launched yet. And you're having to get out ahead of it, which I think is just incredible that without having even launched the marketing campaign, you're having to almost justify the product before it's even got near us.
And I knew that. That was part of my plan.
I'm now in a position where, yeah, I've been on the website, I've signed up to the mailing list, and I've now got into a position where I'm now quietly expectant and quietly quite excited about this launch. And I just hope that everybody listening to this and everybody who's listened to the other interviews that you've done over the past few months actually goes and makes up their own mind. Now, they may go and listen to this stuff and they may decide, you know what, actually, I'll stick with my PS5 and I'll stick with Scarlet, whatever they're going to call it. But I think there is something there. Now, this is a retro gaming podcast, and you've talked already about Shark and Moon Patrol. And I think a lot of the reason why people retro game, part of it's nostalgia, of course it is. But I think part of it's because they hark back to the times when games were just simpler things. And it seems to me that Amico could well be trying to bring that back for us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You nailed it 100%. Absolutely. And yeah, there's, you know, the things that I really try to focus on at the end of the day is can I play a game with my mom and dad again? That's what I want. And my brother and my little godson nephew. And, you know, that's what we're trying to create. And every game that we, and every design element that we put in, I always have that at the top of my mind, because it's so easy to fall into, oh, let's just make it a shooter. You know, it's like, yeah, but is my mom going to pick it up? And by the way, there are some games which they will not. And you saw some of them in the trailer. I don't, you know, my mom's not going to play Night Stalker. My mom's not going to play Armor Battle, right? But, you know, and probably, but she might pick up Astro Smash if it's real easy and we're kind of co-oping it together, you know? So, that's always the goal. And I appreciate you saying that. And of course, people are going to be skeptical. I don't blame them, especially in the retro world, with all the crap that all the others, you know, kind of fail that, you know, and we automatically get lumped into that. But it's a shame though, when certain influencers will lie to their followers about us just to get hits and feel they can make a couple extra bucks. That's where it, you know, crosses a line, but I don't want to end negative, but the reality is that, yeah, I'm going to keep talking about it. Hopefully people feel the passion. And I would say to people, look, at the end of the day, keep an open mind and don't make a decision until you play it.
Sure.
Is that asking too much?
That's the message.
And you know, yeah. The other thing too, remember when the Wii first came out, everybody hated that as well.
Yes.
So
yes.
That's, I always remember that. Keep that in the back of my mind. And by the way, I was one of them. Are they stupid? What the hell? And then I'm like, holy crap, I can play bowling with my mom. This, what a great idea. You know, so that's the thing, no matter, you know, but I am trying to get ahead out of it, because I don't want people, I don't want hardcore gamers finding out about this next summer when the non-gamers are going to find out about it. You know, if I can build a little momentum in that world and get out ahead of it. And, yeah, oh, wow. As a hardcore gamer, I actually want to, this is something that I can pick up. You know, it's not like people aren't going to buy a PlayStation 5, but they might pick this up as well for when their non-gamer friends to come over. They can all have some fun with it, you know?
Yeah. So where can we go at the moment to find out more, or where can we go to keep up with the news?
Yeah, go to IntellivisionAmico.com. Or in television entertainment, it'll the same thing. We'll bring into the same website. Go there and sign up to our mailing list. You can find it all over the place. That's the big thing. Our biggest thing is Facebook on social media. That's where we have the most followers. But we stay active on Twitter. Not so much on Instagram. But yeah, I'd say the mailing list and Facebook. If you have those two things, You'll see all the info you'll need to know.
Okay. And one final question. Does this mean no more video games live?
No, it does not mean that.
Don't make a grown man cry, Tommy. Come on.
No, it does not mean that. You know, like for example, my team just came back from 5.5 weeks in China. We did 15 shows. Wasn't at them. What it does mean is that I might not be at a lot of the shows. You know, I've cut it back, and I'm only trying to do it on the weekends. So, you know, I can leave in television's offices are right next to, the airport, in Orange County. So I can literally leave work at 7 at night, 5 minutes I'm at the airport, get on a plane, load in Saturday morning, rehearse, do the show Saturday night, and I'm back home Sunday morning. And so I've been doing that. I did it last weekend. I was in North Carolina, Raleigh, North Carolina, big sold out show at the North Carolina Symphony. Flew out Friday night, do the show Saturday, back home Sunday.
Crikey. You must be a tired man, I tell you.
And it's not for money. It's because I love doing it, you know?
Yeah. Well, you must let us know if a level 7 ever comes along.
Right. Yeah, for sure. We'll
give us a shout.
Absolutely. I appreciate it. Maybe we'll do a retro one. A whole.
We'd love that.
Retro games only.
Sponsored by Retro Asylum. We'd be all over that. Tommy, it's been an absolute pleasure. You've taken a couple of hours out of your clearly massively busy schedule to talk to us. I hope all the listeners have enjoyed hearing a little bit more about Amico. And I wish you every success. And I'd love to have you back one day.
Absolutely.
Maybe, hopefully, talking about Amico being an absolute blazing success. So thank you so much.
Absolutely.
I hope to speak to you again soon.
Maybe we can talk next summer after we release all the rest of the information, because there'll be a lot more fun stuff to talk about. So, and I appreciate you. I appreciate what you do, keeping retro games alive. And I certainly appreciate you helping us spread the word about the machine. And really, really appreciate you.
Charlie and I were out the back when Vera and Dave came by and said, "Come along and listen to our new podcast." And I was going to, but Charlie said, he says I shouldn't listen to strange people or imposters, and that I should only listen to the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, the Retro Asylum podcast.
So I hope you enjoyed that. I had such an amazing time talking to Tommy. It was my first ever interview, and to be able to do it on my own, it was quite nerve-wracking. I just kind of had a quick beer before it started, just to settle the old nerves. But actually, once we got going, it flowed really well. Tommy and I got on quite well off the air before we started. It was all very easy. He's quite an easygoing, gregarious character, as you've just heard. And yeah, I mean, for one, I'm pretty excited about Intellivision Amico. It comes out a couple of months, probably before PS5. It's going to be a hugely different beast. And when you think about next year, I mean, what are we going to get? We're going to get possibly Atari VCS. Who knows? Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. It's slated for a spring launch. We're going to get PS5. We're probably going to get Scarlet. We'll have had Google Stadia. And now we're also going to get Amico. So it is going to be a pretty amazing year when you factor in the fact that we're going to have things like Final Fantasy VII Remake, Last of Us 2. For those who do also like the modern games, it is going to be a pretty stellar year. And let's hope that over here at Retro Asylum, we will be keeping it retro, of course, and we will be cracking on with the Game Club and other wonderful things right through into 2020. Right, that is all I've got to say. So I just want to plug our usual social media channels. You can find us www.retroasylum.com, and on there you'll find a link to our wonderful Discord group where we chat about everything from hardware stories to retro programming. And you'll also find a channel for our Game Club. We're on Twitter at the Retro Asylum. We're on Facebook if you search for Retro Asylum. And we're also on YouTube. And Dean has started uploading some of the back catalogue of episodes onto YouTube. So go and check those out and see how the show's evolved over the years. But that's it. I'll be back with Mads and Matt for episode 212, where we will have a deep dive into Stunt Car Racer. And speaking of Stunt Car Racer, I better get back to trying to get promotion to the Super League. Cheers, guys. See you next time. Bye-bye.
From now on, unlike your parents were, you are the secret force of Retro Asylum.
Playing so fast, they're the only ones who can take you back in time. They play old games, they're more retro than J1 Optimus Prime. At home or the arcade for adventures.